stand before you in the same predicament I stood in Kansas City some years ago. Brother Hinthorn, the president of a private college, their business college, he was on a program on the radio, and he asked me to appear on the program. Every Sunday morning I was there. And the first time that we appeared on that program, Brother Hinthorn went on with me to introduce me to the audience that might be listening. And he whispered to me and said, "Now, what is your subject this morning I want to tell the audience?" And I looked at him and I said, "I don't have none." Well, that surprised him, and I was telling the truth. And then he said, trying to help me out the best way, he said, "Well, how are you going to speak? Are you going to speak promiscuously?" And I said, "Yes, sir, whatever that is." I stand here today in that same predicament. I'm going to speak to you all this morning promiscuously. Best I can, hoping and trusting that I may say something that will cause all of us to think better and appreciate God's Word more and appreciate Christian education more. I'm sorry as I stand in your presence today that I have to say this, but I will say it because I think you're going to appreciate it. It has gotten to the place where great preachers, men of great stature, men that are highly qualified, are afraid to speak up for Christian education. All awful quiet for that song. Men you would think that went to college, sat at the feet of our great teachers, and learn what they know, were taught, sometimes get in a cramp, and can't speak up for Christian education. Don't get in that position, brethren, because the day is rapidly coming when all of us are going to see the value of Fried Hardeman College. That's right. If I was in certain places, I'd have got amen on that. Now, I don't mean to reflect on this audience, but I do say that I want you to have, after today, a little more courage. A little more courage. Bold enough to stand up for the thing that we are depending on. State of Tennessee, according to the records we find and read in the newspapers, falling down on education. I guess you read it. Our governor is greatly disturbed over it. I'm not speaking something I'm guessing at. Informed men are telling us this. But that isn't Christian education that they're alarmed over. But they should be alarmed over Christian education as well. Because it's going to take education to put us where we rightly belong. And to develop our minds in a way that would be pleasing and acceptable to God. We have a great governor. We have a great governor over Christian education, Jesus Christ. I want to say to you that I believe and sometimes say that Jesus started the greatest school that has ever existed. He picked out a few students. They had no great buildings. They had no soft seats to sit upon. But they sat on the ground in his teaching and in his school and learned the doctrine and the plan of salvation that they were being prepared to deliver to the world. I call that a school. I call those that were listening at him students. And I call him the greatest teacher that ever lived. He's still teaching through his words and through the students that he prepared. Students in our school are now sitting before godly men that are teaching the principles that Jesus left here to be taught to mankind. The greatest institution in the world today is the Church of Christ. It's big enough for all the people of the world. Don't need another church, another extra church, another extra doctrine. You don't need it. This one's big enough. As long as the word stands, the Church of Christ will be big enough. All nations, all kindred, all tongues, to the apostles that he taught and that sat at his feet and received his teaching. I'm not going to bring you something that you can't teach. I want you to go into all the world. I'm building this school. I sometimes think the church is a school. I wouldn't do the church any harm to call it a school where you go and learn and you're taught. Competent men that go to these Christian schools. And I want to congratulate the elders that won't let a man stand in the pulpit that don't understand what he's teaching. The elders. And a lot of times the elders of the church send after the preacher and they want the president of the school to recommend the preacher. They feel that he's more competent and they understand whether he's qualified or not. I congratulate the elders that are that careful about getting somebody to teach dying men and women what to do to be saved. And our preachers today are standing up in the pulpit, coming out of these colleges, and they're not a disgrace either. Sit in the audience after they sat at the feet of these great men like Brother Dixon, Brother Atkins Clay Pullius, all of these great teachers and great preachers and great presidents, and how the church can sit back and cross their legs and say, don't give the schools out of the treasure. Don't go into treasure for nothing. Don't get nothing out of that. Why, when you, where did you learn that? Oh, where, what is your purpose? Don't get it out of that. Well, the school today, we wouldn't be making the progress we're making if it wasn't for these great men. As we said, Brother Don Morris and Brother Ovid Harding, what's his name? Vincent, that's right, was a great missionary, I think, to Japan. Then he comes to here and takes a great work in America to prepare other workers for Japan. The schools are not recognized and given the credit that they deserve. I'm glad I'm not an educator. But I'm something, all right. I'm put in, and as I want the presidents of these schools to know, and I'm over there in your corner. I'm over there in your corner because of my little feeble way. I've learned that you'll have to sit at feet of great men if you learn what to do. I never was at their feet. I had no privilege of sitting at their feet of such institutions, but I had the privilege of rubbing up against them. You can't go to school and get it. Associate with them that have it and rub up against them. You're bound to get some of it on you. And a little bit of it in you. And help the world to recognize the great benefactors of our great country and our great world that we live in. Living in a world that's hungering and starving for the right kind of education. Until the heads of our educational institutions recognize the Bible, they're going to be lacking, they're going to be short, and they're going to be robbed of the greatest teaching that exists today. I just hope and pray that these presidents of our colleges will not become discouraged. I know the church ain't pulling with you like she ought to. I know that. But it may be she's just waiting to be taught. I see that the church is waiting to be taught, as I mistake not, the elders are the ones that are the oversight of the church. They are the ones to see that the proper teaching is given the church. And the elders of our great churches today in congregations are trying to do that. I had the privilege of being in Mayfield, Kentucky. Our brother Nichols' son is a preacher. He done something there that would scare most preachers. Most preachers would be afraid. I didn't tell him this because I knew why I was going to tell it where it would do more good. I didn't tell him this, but I want to tell you that boy had the courage to take a chance on losing his job, telling the people about Brother Cato and Brother Keeble being here in interest of Christian education. And he interrupted some one or twice, once or twice there to put a little more pressure that we thought we hadn't put on. I wish I could meet a lot of preachers like that. It takes courage to do that. It takes courage. You don't know whether your brother likes it or not. But you're going to have to learn to have courage and faith. And that boy just got up and said, Brother Keeble's here trying to help one of the greatest whites among us. And Brother Cato is here with him, brought him down so he could speak tonight. And he went on to elaborate, whatever that is. He went on, and to my surprise, he was congratulated by the leaders of that congregation. And I won't tell you what we received financially, but some of our brothers said, don't take up the lecture. Stand him at the door and let him be like a beggar standing there. Let him stick something in it. You know he didn't do that. He got up and said, now put something in these plates. Put something in there. And you go standing a man in a door and look like he's thrown away. When did we go to line? Standing at the door. He's advocating the pain the world needs. And the church is starving for, and he's standing at the door like a beggar, trying to see where you drop something in there. Ain't nobody grunting this morning. You know, friends, I'm not showing out, but I do hate to see my brother afraid to endorse that is right. I hate to see you handcuffed. I hate to see you shackled. If I could just knock a loose one shackle today. I know of a place I speak not long ago, spoke rather, and there's an incident happened there I'd like to tell, but it might not be good. It might, you know, we've got to hold back some things till people can grow stronger. Y'all not stronger for this other thing I fixed. Now then, Brother Dixon, I don't think, Brother Dixon, I have a greater friend among the brethren today than you are. I don't think I have a greater friend that's done more to encourage me and insist that I contend. And he said this morning, just say whatever you got on your heart. Well, that's what I'm doing. I'm unloading. Now. Just a few days ago, we went up to a little place, Brother Cato, who was so kind to carry me around all over the country to give his calls and invitations. And next Saturday night, if nothing happened, I'll be in Oklahoma City at the great college there, Christian College by Brother Barron. I'll be with him. Brother Cato will carry me over there. And I don't think it'd be, I ought to tell this, shut up. It's an example for all of it. He says, Keeble in his letter to me, and I handed it over to Brother Cato so he could see how encouraging it that was. He said, in the work that you're doing, he said, Brother Cato will bring you, and we'll give him $400 and you $400, that's $800 to come over and speak. Never received a letter like that in my life. I passed it on to him, and I thought so much of it, I told him to show it to a man that had given away millions for Christian education. Turn on up there and give it to Brother Burton. Tell him to read it. Burton needs encouragement. Done more for this kind of work than any single human being in America or in the world. He needs to read that to let him know that other people think like he's thinking. He needs encouragement, a pat on the back. Even a fellow like me to pat him. That's right, you're somebody. You've got to let somebody, let him know somebody appreciates what you're doing. And a great work like this, a great work like this, we can't say too much. We can't say too much. And if we could just lay down jealousy a little bit, we'd all do a greater work than we're now doing. Somebody's afraid one will do more than the other, and he doesn't push him along, and thus the work dies. All comes up short of what it needs. I just hope and pray the day will come when we'll just have courage enough to back up that is right, regardless of where our friends are. We're too much inclined to make friends. You can see I'm not trying to make a friend in the world this morning. I believe Brother Dixon will always be my friend, but I'm not begging him to be my friend. I believe he'll always, from a principle of right. Brother Dixon will always be a friend of mine from a principle of right. That kind of friend, it will be substantial. He'll back you up and encourage you, and God will bless you. Why, if Jesus had been looking for the friendship of Peter, he would have endorsed him cutting that fellow's ear off. He said, "Thank you, Peter. He was about to hurt me." But Jesus didn't care nothing about his friendship. He wasn't seeking his friendship. He said, "Now, Peter, you've done the wrong thing. Put that thing up." Now, how many of you have had that much courage when a fellow is trying to help you? If he's wrong, tell him he's wrong. Not only, Peter, I want you to remember you've got the wrong weapon. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they're spiritual. Put that thing up. I've got a sword down there sharper than that. I've got one down there that's two-edged. Is that right? And you stop cutting that man with that. Why, Jesus became a friend to the man that got his ear cut off and stuck it back. Is that right? I'm not looking for friends. I speak at these colleges, but I'm not trying to make friends. And I want you to know this morning, I'm not trying to make friends. I'll preach so that you call me back. If you never call me back, I'm going to say what I've got to say this morning. I believe God is listening. God's looking down on us. And when I see all these machines operating, it lets me know you better be careful, because everybody's going ahead. Most preachers, we stand up here this way, spread the wrong thing, we'll get out. It doesn't make any difference what gets out. Be sure you please Jesus. I'm trying to get a message through the heaven so I can get the endorsement of the man that bought the church, paid for it, hanging on the cross, and said it's finished. Nothing you can do about it. Now then, just a few days ago, Brother Cato was always awful nice to me. A young lady nursing at St. Thomas Hospital. She called up to office and asked me, could I come up and talk with a certain gentleman up there? Didn't even say white brother. Just said a certain brother up here wants you to see you. He's been operated on, and they want him to see you. He wants to see you. And I said, I'll be up. I said, Brother Cato's been over there to visit him, and he'll bring me up. And sure enough, I knew I didn't have to see Cato and beg him to carry me up to St. Thomas. He did that and got up there, and to my surprise, I'd never seen the gentleman, but he sent regular monthly for years to the National Christian Institute. His checks come regular. Never seen him, never know nothing about him. But he wanted something to lift the Negro and put him on a higher plane in an educational sense and a better understanding of the Bible. And in his feeble way, he sent a contribution monthly for years. And then when he spied me, I told him who I was, grabbed me around the neck, and done something I don't think has ever been done to me, hugged me and kissed me. White man and a Negro hugging and kissing. Well, what done that? Jesus said, my word is quick and hard. It's sharper than the two-edged sword. I couldn't hold back the tears as he grabbed me. He had heard about me. He'd read about me in the Gospel Advocate, the Firm Foundation, and all our religious papers. He had longed to see me. And of course, when he grabbed me around the neck, I grabbed him around him. And all the patients and nurses were looking, looked like everybody was holding their breath while we hugged. You see. Do you see what the God? I'm trying to show you what the gospel will do. It'll move all shame. It'll move all hatred. And create more love in our hearts, because it will take love to hide a multitude of sins. My friends, this is a great college. Some years ago, I came out here. Brother Hardiman arranged for meeting for me to go out here in Oak Grove. Well, it wasn't arranged for Oak Grove. It was arranged for here at Lucyville, a little Negro section at a Baptist church. And when they heard who it was coming, they slammed the doors and said, you can't come in here. Brother Hardiman at that time was a superintendent of the school. And they went to him and said, they're not going to let him in. He said, well, I'm superintendent of the school. I'll let him in the school out there. Went into school, and the next thing you know, here come Hardiman sitting in the pulpit with me to endorse it. And the colored people had never heard it in their lives. Fourth angel looking at me like it was wild. We broke up the annual Methodist conference. The Methodists among the colored people had never had another conference in that section. And they used to have them annually. But the gospel has power. It broke up the conference. You know, they can't hold a conference without members. And I baptized all the members. That's it. That's it. That's really it. And as much as it's done that church right now, has built one of the prettiest little meeting houses. They built three or four. Every time they were a little better. And today, they're blessed to have a brick one. A brick one. Oh, I never dreamed of seeing a brick church building out that old goal, but a beautiful brick building. What does it represent? Not only the colored people, it represents the church that Jesus died for. The greatest institution in the world. And if you pardon me, I don't know that I need to be asking pardon if I just say that it's the greatest institution in the world and the only one which a man can be saved. I'm so glad to have the colored brother here, Harris, who just read for us. And with a bit to endorse me, I don't know of a greater preacher among us than Braden and Harris, but the white brother everywhere endorsed them, because I tell them, whatever you do, preach the gospel, live clean, keep yourself unspotted from the world, and the white brother will come to your rescue. Well, I never would have been out here. No church would have been out there if the white brother hadn't helped me and supported me in that way. And Hardiman sat up there and looked right, and you know they got up a committee to go around and see Hardiman and break up that meeting, that fellow's tan up our churches. And Hardiman, they went to Hardiman, superintendent of the school, and Mr. Hardiman, Mr. Brody, that's what they call him. Mr. Brody is a man out there that's tan up all our churches, and couldn't you stop him? Now, Brody was smart. The Bible says wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. He was wise, but like a serpent, he just sat still and asked them, said, well, will you get the names of all them that he's baptized? And bring them up here to me. Well, they brought the names up there to him. And he said, well, these young men right here, has he got them? He said, well, nothing I can do about it. He's got the leading citizens of that community, and the law would uphold them if they want it. And here they are obeying it. Just happens that we had the right superintendent. I'd have been out of there and gone had it been for that superintendent. Brethren, let us wake up. Let us stick to a thing when it's right. No doubt Hardiman's job depended on it and his position depended on it, but stick to it. If it's right, die with it. Die with it. And not long ago, I went into Tampa and got to preaching. A white man and his wife came by then, a long Cadillac driving slowly, and saw so many white people up under the tent. Why, they said, they believe you turn around and go back down there and see what is that. I said, never seen nothing like that in Tampa. White people crowding around a colored meeting like that. And they come back down there and sat around and listened at it. And for 30 days, he and his wife didn't miss. They got them in it, too. They wasn't members of the Church of Christ. But they're members now. That's Brother Owens. Brother Owens, a real estate man in Tampa. Brother Owens. And also became an elder one of the leading white churches in Tampa, if not one now. It means to me to preach the gospel, and you don't know who you're hitting. Hit anybody. Sow the seed of the kingdom, and let it, you know whose heart is going to fall in. Sow it. Sow the seed of the kingdom, and let it sprout and come up, and bring forth fruit to the glory and the honor of Jesus Christ. My wife said to me this morning, she says, Papa, you reckon you're able to go out there? I said, sure. I feel better this morning than I felt in a year. Been operated on twice here recently, at 83 and 84th year. You can see the way I'm going at it now, I'm liable to be here 80 more. You can see. I think, Brother Dixon, knowing to the lateness of the hour, I'm not through now. I don't think I'm through. But try to be decent and in order. I got a lot of friends in here. One white brother said to me last year when I got through speaking, the old gentleman walked up to me. He said, I got up at 2 o'clock this morning so I could be here by 10 and hear you. He said, I live down in Mississippi. And I got up about 2. It took that long to get here. He might be here this evening. If he's not here, a lot of y'all are here out of Mississippi. One of the greatest states in America. And no better people live in America than the Mississippi people. I've worked in Mississippi for 25 years. And they've helped me to build meeting houses. They love the people that they have on that plantation. All of that. If I wished I had time to just talk along this time, because you need a lot of this. You know, I'm one of those men that if people don't enjoy what you're saying, enjoy it yourself.